Well, good afternoon, everybody. I'm Senate Republican Leader Mark Johnson. We're here today to talk about the next part of our Minnesota First plan. We all know that no matter what the statistics are, crime is making people feel less safe. Whether it's a Ring camera that catches the robbery or the carjacking on your street or the tragic attacks on law enforcement and our first responders across the state, or victim who learns that their attacker is being let loose early on good behavior. Democrats have made Minnesota less safe, especially for those people who put on the badge and uniform every single day. That's why we're putting Minnesota First policy together by keeping criminals in prison, bring transparency to sentencing guidelines, and supporting our law enforcement. Today I have with me Senator Cruen, Limmer, and Duckworth, and they're going to talk a little bit about the proposals that we're putting together in this package. So I'll kick it over to Senator Cruen.
Hello, everybody. I'm Senator Michael Cruen. I represent District 32, which is the communities of Blaine, Ham Lake, Columbus, and Lexington. My bill that I'm going to talk about today would repeal the Minnesota Rehabilitation and Reinvestment Act, which primarily included reducing the amount of prison time from two-thirds of a sentence to just one-half of a sentence before they're eligible for parole. And it puts 92% of Minnesota's prison population on a path to early release. Most people I've talked with out in the community about this change are surprised to learn that Minnesota doesn't already have these rehabilitation opportunities available to prisoners to get the existing two-thirds reduction. They didn't realize that it was basically automatic for most crimes. My constituents are more surprised to learn that Minnesota already has one of the smallest prison populations in the country. With the MRRA, I'm sure we're likely headed towards being the lowest in the country. And that's concerning when you consider who is eligible for the MRRA. The list at the time of passage includes 96 violent juveniles who overnight saw their sentences reduced from 25 years to 15 years. These are criminals who were convicted of heinous crimes, and without any input from their victims, the judges, or considering the jury decision, the Democrats decided to reduce their sentence. The Democrats could have worked with us 2 years ago. We understand that for many, rehabilitation in prison can be a life-changing opportunity, but when it's retroactively applied to nearly every prisoner, you are allowing the hardened criminals to game the system and earn an early release by simply checking boxes off a list. Repealing the MRRA and finding bipartisan compromise is how we tell Minnesotans that we are putting their safety first. And with that, Senator Limmer will be up next.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Warren Limmer. I'm the ranking member of the Senate Judiciary and Public Safety Committee. I'm going to be directing my comments to the issue of the Minnesota Sentencing Guidelines Commission. Once considered a research and advisor of criminal justice policies, the Sentencing Guidelines Commission was later granted about 35 to 40 years ago the authority to alter criminal sentences without legislative involvement. Once acted upon, their decisions have the full effect of law unless the legislature votes to repeal and a governor sign that same legislation. This authority has become problematic. This practice has recently put Minnesota on the path to reduce criminal sentences despite significant pushback from the public and as well as law enforcement. The commission is made up of 8 appointees by the governor, 3 appointed by the Supreme Court. In recent years, Governor Waltz's appointees to the Minnesota Sentencing Guidelines Commission have made Minnesota less safe by reducing sentences and have placed nearly a universal 5-year cap on all probation sentences. The legislative branch, and I have to emphasize this, the The legislative branch of government represents the voice of the people, not an executive branch governor-appointed commission. My series of bills will ensure the Minnesota Sentencing Guidelines Commission has, number one, public meetings that are recorded and available for public review. Two, create a publicly searchable database of sentences statewide. And three, put the responsibility of writing criminal law and sentences back to where it belongs, in the hands of lawmakers, by requiring the legislature to affirmatively vote to approve recommendations from the Sentencing Guidelines Commission. These bills today will bring transparency to criminal sentences in our state. We have far too many instances where those who have been convicted of a crime are receiving a light sentence, then turned loose, and continue to victimize innocent people. These examples not only frustrate and scare our people, our public, but also demoralizes our law enforcement community. Every government official in the state has a part to play in putting Minnesotans' safety first, and these bills will create much needed transparency and accountability to the public to follow. Thank you. I'll now introduce Senator Duckworth.
Well, thank you and good afternoon. In 2016, Philando Castile was sadly, fatally shot during a traffic stop. As a result, the legislature and governor at the time passed a bipartisan bill that created a fund for law enforcement training. 1 year after the incident, Governor Mark Dayton said, "My hope is that the fund will provide training in the best practices to improve law enforcement's relationships with people in all Minnesota communities, and will also create partnerships in which community and law enforcement leaders are together designing and delivering training." Unfortunately, the most recent budget proposal by Governor Walz fails to continue funding the Philando Castile Police Training Initiative. The bill I've authored is a bipartisan bill and would continue to fund this important training at its customary amount of $6 million annually. It ensures law enforcement are prepared for the wide variety of situations they encounter, including use of force, crisis response management, conflict management, and community engagement. It has been a bipartisan priority in the past, and I'm hopeful it will continue to be supported by both Republicans and Democrats moving forward. Additionally, we are proposing $3.5 million in violent crime enforcement training for law enforcement. This fully funds the request for approximately 1 year and demonstrates to law enforcement that we will support them doing their jobs to the highest standard. During a time in which the pendulum is swinging back toward common sense, we can begin to undo the harm caused by those who irresponsibly called for the defunding and dismantling of police departments and even encouraged violence against those in uniform. For years, they vilified an honorable profession in an attempt to score cheap political points, and in the process had a substantial negative impact on public safety in Minnesota while fanning the flames of division. They even went so far as to try and eliminate school resource officers from schools all across our state, to which teachers, students, parents, and entire communities said, "The safety of our kids and schools comes before politics." The number one thing we hear from law enforcement officers in Minnesota is that some political and elected officials don't support them and their loved ones. While we can't stop the extreme and politically motivated narratives perpetuated by some, we can push back with the truth. That the men and women in uniform protecting and serving our communities are honorable, noble, and selfless heroes who put their lives on the line every day for fellow Minnesotans. They are moms and dads, sons and daughters, brothers and sisters, they're our neighbors, and they're our friends. It's long past time that we all come together, heal the divide, and give our local police and sheriffs the support they're requesting and that they deserve. We thank them for their service and sacrifice. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, thank you. And as you can see, it's low-hanging fruit. It's simple ideas that we can be pushing forward today, whether it's a repeal of the MRA, if it's funding for Philando Castile's fund, or if it's for reform that we need within our agencies. There's some very low-hanging fruit that we're going to be proposing here and bringing forward so that we put Minnesotans first when it comes to public safety. With that, I'll open to questions.
Bipartisan support for any of the proposals thus far?
Well, certainly we need bipartisan support for that, but these are very common sense proposals, things that we think are very effective, things that would Minnesotans across the state would agree with. And so we're going to be looking for co-authors on these that look, we need champions for these on both sides of the fence. And so we're going to be pushing for that. Unfortunately, Democrats over the last 2 years have really pushed away from common sense reform. Take, for example, the MRA that's going to make 92% of those in prison, felons there, eligible for early release. So these are things that we need to start correcting and looking for common sense going forward. So it's a great question, though.
Mark, if I may, the bill that I referenced.
So if I failed to mention it, the bill I referenced is bipartisan.
Yeah, your bill, the Philando Castile Fund?
Correct.
Yeah.
Senator Duckworth, do you have any insight into why that wasn't included in the governor's budget proposal?
I don't know why. You'd have to ask him. It's been bipartisan in the past, historically, and so I'd like to think it was an oversight, but at the same time, we've seen our police departments and law enforcement in general suffer from movements to defund them or limit their funding. I hope that's not the case here and that we can get it fixed.
Senator Kroon, would there be a fiscal note on the repeal of the MRRA?
Well, I mean, there was a fiscal implication to the MRRA to begin with, and anytime you kind of change course, there could potentially be one. But the point here is that we're putting Minnesotans first, and that bill that was passed 2 years ago was not bipartisan. There was really no input from any Republicans. And from my perspective, it wasn't a bill that Minnesotans were even thinking about or entertaining at all. And so it just came out of what I view as a political opportunity 2 years ago under the Democrat trifecta to move in that direction and do something that was really against the grain of where Minnesotans' heads were on public safety at the time. So what I'm proposing is a reset, to go back, repeal the MRRA, and to have a bipartisan approach. Not everything in the MRRA is bad. There are good rehabilitation things in there that we can have a discussion about. But it went too far, and it's putting Minnesotans' safety at risk. And so that is one of our fundamental obligations here in the legislature, is to ensure public safety for Minnesotans. So that's why this bill is important. The rollout is happening here very, very soon. So time is of the essence here. You're going to start noticing little by little more and more offenders that are going to be getting out on early release. And I hope you all are tracking that, because that will be the point where Minnesotans probably say, what happened? Why is this happening? And my bill is a reminder that it doesn't have to be this way. We can start over and come up with a bipartisan solution.
Senator Limmer, I feel like in previous sessions I've covered here, I guess this is my fifth or sixth now, time comes at you fast, that you've introduced iterations of this before, and it hasn't gone anywhere, and that was, in a divided legislature, and then, of course, a Democrat trifecta. So I'm wondering what you think the opposition to the transparency on some of these things are, and what are those conversations like with Democrats about why they wouldn't support something like this?
Well, quite honestly, I think it's an allegiance to the governor and his 8 appointed members of the Sentencing Guidelines Commission. I believe the Democrats are very loyal to the governor. They understand the presence of those 8 members on this commission and the unique authority that's been given to the commission as basically lawmakers. Serious questions are raised when you give that authority to someone that is not elected by the public. The public is the one who votes for representatives. They call representatives that title because we represent, at least for a Senate district, 80,000 people. The commission members do not. They represent the ideas of the governor. And having 8 members to offset 3 Supreme Court appointees is very concerning. It should be something more closer to the people, and that's through the legislature.
So you're not proposing getting rid of this commission entirely. You're just saying you want these things.
No, I'm not planning on getting rid of the commission. I think the commission has a valid presence to give direction to the legislature like its original mission was. But nevertheless, I think that authority that was given by the legislature 35 to 40 years ago was a step way too far.
Senator Limmer, on the searchable database, would that allow somebody to go in and look up a particular criminal and see what happened with their sentencing? Or is it composite?
We haven't determined how defined that information is going to be. It could be aggregate or it could be specific. I'd want to make sure that we're not violating any data privacy laws in the process. But keep in mind, all of those records are public. This would only give someone the opportunity to easily get the information regarding the behavior of the courts and how they sentence individuals, and does the Sentencing Guidelines Commission have an effect on that? And so that's where we are right now. I did want to make one comment about funding. I was the chief author of that law enforcement funding back in 2011 and 2012. That was a significant demand by the Democrat Party to offer more training to supplement existing training for law enforcement back and in that time. And I'm rather shocked and surprised that the governor would not include that critical funding for law enforcement in today's budget proposal that he wrote earlier this session. I haven't gotten an answer from the governor. I haven't gotten an answer from Democrat leaders in the Senate of why that's been scratched off the list. But it was so critical at that early time. It's been critical throughout this entire decade, especially with the background of George Floyd. And quite honestly, this is a critical element for law enforcement. It's critical for local budgets of local political subdivisions to have adequate resources to make sure that their police officers are adequately trained. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.